seated, I will invite you to take your copies of God's Word and to turn with me to Ruth and chapter 2, verses 1 through 23. We're in the Old Testament book of Ruth, chapter 2, verses 1 through 23. Our sermon title for this morning is Sheltered by the Wings of God. Sheltered by the Wings of God, as we continue to walk verse by verse through the book of Ruth in our sermon series, Redeeming Grace. We're in chapter 2 and verses 1 through 23, and I'll read those at this time. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping. Go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. Now you left your father and mother in your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. And when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw that what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest. and she lived with her mother-in-law. This is the word of the Lord. Let us hear it. Let us heed it. Now, the name of the little village that you and I live in is Providence. The name of the church here is Providence Village Baptist Church. And I'm told as I read the sign out there, the historical marker, that Providence is one of the second, perhaps, oldest settlement in all of Florida, perhaps behind St. Augustine itself. And so it has roots for some time. And while it may have been early on that some Spanish settlers came here, it got the name Providence eventually. I don't know who named it or how it got that way, but I like the name of it. I like the name of Providence, and it tells me something perhaps of the theology of those who first settled here. It tells me something about their commitment to the Word of the Lord. As you know, Providence is this idea, this concept in Scripture that God is involved in each and every detail of our lives. God has ordained all things, and that God is working for the good of His glory. God is working for the good of those who love Him and are called, like Romans 8:28 says, to work everything together. That which is good and that which is bad, He's working all of this together in His sovereignty and is in His control, and even in human's decisions and happenings and historical events, working it together to bring about His plan and His glory and everything that happens. And so while many in our day marvel at the miraculous nature of God and see in the work of miracles and things and are enthralled by that, and we ought to be enthralled when God would unilaterally speak and God would unilaterally do something that is outside of the ordinary, that is outside of that which we see the way that the world usually works, whether it be an axe head that floats or a person that's blind from birth that can suddenly see and has working eyes, whatever it might be, those miracles, we can be enthralled at the power of God in them. I wonder if we're equally amazed, though, and equally think about and walk looking for how God works in everyday, ordinary instances and everyday, ordinary sort of events, because I am more amazed at those sorts of things. At the check that comes in the mail just when you need it. At the word of encouragement that is given to you when you didn't let anybody know that you were discouraged and think about quitting. At the job that shows up at just the right time. At whatever it might be. Just how God does things. There are bad things that happen to us. We go through trials and suffering. That's true of Naomi and Ruth, isn't it? I mean, they went away into Moab full, Naomi says. She had a husband. She had two sons. Life was blessing. There was a famine that brought them into Moab, and they made that decision to leave. But eventually her husband dies. Her sons marry Moabite women. Then her sons, they both die. And she is left to come back to Bethlehem, having heard that God has visited His people, that the famine is over, that there's a great harvest there in Bethlehem. And she decides to come back, and she tries to persuade her daughters to leave her, to go back and get married and go back to their people and stay in their homeland, and that she will go on to Bethlehem. She's a widow and doesn't have anything. She's does no way to provide for them or herself, and is really going to be dependent upon charity. Orpah, one of the daughters-in-law, goes back, and Ruth, she clings to Naomi. She says that I'm going to enter into your covenant people, that I'm going to go where you go. I'm going to die where you die. I'm going to be buried where you're buried. Your people are going to be my people. Your God's going to be my God. She's entering into this covenant relationship with the God of Israel and the people of Israel. And she is sticking with Naomi. And so they come into Bethlehem. They come into Bethlehem, and Naomi says, My name that means pleasant is not so pleasant. Life's not been pleasant. Life's been very bitter to me. I left full. I've come back empty. And we don't know really fully what she thinks of this woman, Ruth, that's with her. The story in chapter 1 is really about Naomi. But it's going to switch gears a little bit. And you're going to see that God is going to provide for Naomi in Ruth. Naomi didn't understand it yet. Naomi was at the bottom of the barrel, in the pit. She had hit rock bottom, as we might say. There was nowhere to go, as we might say, as up. And yet Ruth is God's blessing to her. It says at the very end of the chapter in verse 1 that they arrived in Bethlehem right at the time of the barley harvest. Which means, theologically, it means that God's about to bring in a harvest. But physically, it means they arrived about the end of March, early April. The barley harvest was the first thing to get ripe, the first thing to be harvested. And so getting there at the time of the barley harvest means that you would be able to stock up for the winter, because you'd be able to be there for barley and then wheat and then other things that they would then have seasonal harvest after that. So they were at the beginning of the harvesting season. And then we come to chapter 2 and verse 1. And we read this. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. So we have this introduction of this man named Boaz. Now it's interesting. What we have here, and what we're looking for, are hints and signs of God's providence here. All of this information that's given, it plays out in the story. All of the information that's given here in verse 1, we see in this chapter, we see through the dialogue, we get it somewhere else later. The narrator doesn't have to tell us or introduce all of this, but this is foreshadowing for us. The narrator wants us to see, first of all, this man named Boaz, and he wants us to put that in our mind, because you need to keep your eye on Boaz. You need to keep your eye here, because God is doing something. God's got a plan here that we are already getting hints at what might take place later. We're already getting hints at something to keep in mind at. Here we know there's these two widow women, a young one and an old one, and they've covenanted together and they're dependent upon the Lord, and they've come back to Bethlehem at a time when there's a harvest, but they have nothing. They're dirt poor. And we're introduced to a man named Boaz. Now we're told that about him, that his name is Boaz, but we're told two other things there in verse 1. One is that he is a relative of Naomi's husband. Now, so he's not any kin, any blood to Naomi herself, but Elimelech, who Naomi was married to, he is a kinsman of him. He's a relative. How close, we don't know. But he's a relative of Naomi's husband. He's from the clan of Elimelech. So a clan being a little bigger than a family, a extended family, a little bigger than that. We also find out the second thing about him, that he is what's called a worthy man. He is described as a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. Now, in other places in Scripture, this phrase, a worthy man, is used of a great warrior. It's used of a person like Gideon and other people who demonstrate military prowess and strength. And we see none of that in Boaz. We don't get any sense that or know if he's been in any wars or any, if he's battle ready or anything like that. A man of valor, a worthy man. Some have suggested that for us, we might think of Boaz in this way, that he is like a chivalrous knight, that he is a worthy, noble man. He's as we might say, her knight in shining armor. He is that person, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. If God is going to bless them, then there needs to be two qualifications of this individual. He needs to be a relative to raise up for this Moabite woman, raise up for her husband. Needs to be someone who is a relative of theirs. And secondly, he needs to be a worthy man, a noble man, a man of God, God's strength. God doesn't provide a loser sort of individual. God doesn't provide a sorry rogue or scoundrel of a person. So we see this introduction to the man Boaz, and notice that we should keep our eye on him. It's kind of like in a movie when you're watching the movie and you know it's a romance. You've bought this genre of romance, and you know that eventually these two are going to get together. But it starts off showing each of them going about their lives. You're introduced to them one and then the other separately, and what's happening in their individual lives. And the good news is that they're not going to get together until the end. But we're going to see them going about their individual lives and the circumstances that bring them into contact. The circumstances that bring them together. And we're going to see how that God is the one who is behind that. We know, so we have kind of the behind the scenes action. And we know that the director of the movie knows that these two are going to end up together. And here are the things that we need to be paying attention to in order to produce the story. The narrator knows the same. The narrator knows that God is involved in this, that God is bringing these two together, and that God is behind the scenes working to get these two together. And we get to be involved in that. He's showing us the things to pay attention to. So the second thing we see is this interlude, not only the introduction of Boaz, but this interlude between Ruth and Naomi. It says in verse 2, Ruth the Moabite. Don't miss that. She is called and will continue to be called Ruth the Moabite. The author does not want us to forget that she is a foreigner, that she is an outcast, that she is not naturally someone from the nation of Israel. And Ruth the Moabite, she said to Naomi, her mother-in-law, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." She doesn't know anything. She just, whoever might be gracious to me, whoever might allow me to do so. This is great initiative by a foreign woman going into a town where everybody knows Naomi, but nobody knows her. They just know that she's a foreigner. She's not from around there. And she's going to go take the initiative to go into the fields and to glean, to see what she can gather together for food, because they're poor, and that's the only way that they can get some things. Gleaning, this idea of gleaning was prescribed in the law itself. In Leviticus and in Deuteronomy, the people of Israel are instructed that they're to leave the edges and the corners of their fields unharvested so that the poor could come and to take from those edges and those corners of the field so that they could have something to eat. This is a kind of work for welfare sort of system. It's not a handout. You have to actually get up and harvest some things to get it. But it was allowing for the poor to be provided for, especially those who were widows and other things. They had to work and harvest and go and get this stuff. But the farmers would not could take their harvest, but were supposed to leave the edges. And so she's going to do that. She's going to go and glean and in a field that where they might allow her to do that, anywhere that might allow her. And so Naomi, since he says, "Go, my daughter, go and do that." She recommends that she do that. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Now the issue is you have to stand back. You can't get in among the reapers. You can't start harvesting with them. You have to take only what's left. If they miss some or they drop some or something like that, they're instructed not to go back for those things that they drop or those things that they miss. But she has to glean. So it helps to be in a good position because she wouldn't be the only gleaner out there. Then I want you to see something. The insertion of providence into the scene, into the narrator. There in verse 3. And it says, she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Now we've been introduced to this person, and now she doesn't know it, but she has come into the part of the field that belongs to him. And the narrator says it happened, almost as if it happened by chance. And he's saying this as a narrator, knowing that he's writing it. It happens by chance. He just kind of randomly walks into that. But what he's screaming behind the scenes is, God is doing this. This is not chance at all. This is not happenstance. But she wasn't intending to come into Boaz's field. She doesn't even know who Boaz is. She doesn't have any idea about any of this. But God is directing her. God is guiding her. She's making decisions. And it just so happened that God brings her into the right part of the field where she is going to meet the right person. You ever know this? Notice the hand of God in this way? What it's telling us and teaching us is to look for the hand of God in things. You start looking for God and you'll find Him. You'll find Him working and doing. And a lot of times, a lot of stuff is happening that we're not aware of. John Piper rightly says that God may be doing 10,000 things in our life and we're aware of about 3 of them. We have no idea all the things that God is doing and working. And she's not aware at this time. She's just trying to get a little barley. She's wandering after those that are harvesting in the field. But she comes to exactly the place that she needs to be. And God has her right where He wants her to be. Now, fourthly, we see this inquiry of Boaz about Ruth. This inquiry of Boaz about Ruth, there in verses 4 and following. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. He's this noble, wealthy man from Bethlehem of the clan of Elimelech. And he wasn't out there, but he's coming out to supervise the process and the harvest. So he comes out from Bethlehem to the field. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." So one thing we notice immediately is something of this worth of this individual, that he has the language of Zion and the language of the Lord upon his lips. That you can tell a lot about a person sometimes from the first words that come out of their mouth. And the first words that come out of Boaz as he goes into the field is, "The Lord be with you." Yahweh, the God of Israel, Yahweh be with you. And his men, they answered back, "Yahweh bless you." We can see something of the kind of individual, the kind of boss that Boaz would have been. He sets forth a pleasant working environment. His first thing is not to criticize, but to bless and to greet. And his men seem to love and to respect him just by the things that they say, the way that they interact. Doesn't take long for Boaz to notice Ruth. Verse 5, Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers. This indicates that there's some difference in age between Boaz and this youngster, this man that is in charge. Boaz said to his young foreman who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" Literally what he said is not "who is she," but "whose is she?" Like, what is her status? Who does she belong to? Who does she go with? He doesn't necessarily looking for her name as much as he wants to know, what's her story? How did she come to be here? What's her situation? Because he knows everybody in this town, and she's different. He doesn't recognize her. "Whose young woman is this? who, what's her husband perhaps? Who's her father maybe, is what he's asking. He wants to know. But the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered in verse 6, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." Doesn't tell us her name. He just describes her as a Moabite woman. You know the one that came back that everybody knows in town. Nobody necessarily knows her name or has any interactions with her, but we can tell you that she has come back with Naomi. You've heard this story. She said, so he's saying, she asked, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she had asked permission to do this, and he had granted it. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. So the guy doesn't really mention her name, but like any good foreman, he kind of says, "I don't really know all of who she is. She just came and asked. We let her glean. I tell you what, she's been working like a dog out there ever since she got here. She's only taken a short rest out in the hot sun following after the reaper. She is working hard for Naomi. I can tell you that. So not only did Boaz notice her, but clearly the young man who was in charge of the reapers had also noticed and been paying attention to Ruth. So next, what we find then in verse 8 and following is this: the invitation of Boaz to Ruth. The invitation of Boaz to Ruth in verse 8. "Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'Now listen, my daughter.'" Now he calls her that, first of all, to respect. This is someone that is younger than he is, far younger than he is. There's a considerable age difference. But also we see this kind of tenderness that he has with her, this respect that he shows her. "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women." So Boaz has not only men reaping, but also women gathering and putting in bundles. There are other women that are working there in the field. And Boaz instructs Ruth to keep close to them. Not to keep some distance away, not to wait, but to keep close to his young women, to work with them and alongside them. Not to go in any other field, not to be led into following after any others, but to stay with his people. And he says, "Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping." So when you come day after day, you start looking for my workers and my women and my men and where they're reaping. And you go and make sure that you work there and go after them. "Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." So he is providing for her. He is protecting her. He is respecting her. Young women out there, this is the kind of man you need to look for. Someone that will provide for you, someone that will respect you, someone that will protect you. Look for a godly man like that, someone who has God not only in their heart but on their lips, and they talk about and see God in everything. We see that he is caring for her. In fact, this is he's setting, if you will, if I can speak anachronistically, he's setting an anti-sexual harassment policy right here. He's saying, "I've already instructed the men not to mess with you, not to touch you, not to tell you to get back, not to tell you to keep your distance. I've told them not to, and I've also said that you're allowed to come and drink from their water," which would have been precious. I mean, for us, you just go to the spigot, right? Or we've got plenty of water here or there. They have to go and actually draw water from wells and carry it. And so water would have been a precious commodity for all of them. But she is told not to take time out to go draw water for herself, but to stay there. to use the water that they've already drawn, that he's providing for her. Then what does she do? You see also her humility. She falls on her face, bowing to the ground. She's just humbled and gracious by this. In verse 10, she says to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" She's saying, why are you being so good and gracious to me? What, I'm not anything and not anyone, and moreover, I'm not even from Israel. I'm from outside of this. This is so unlike what I expected. She has this expectation that she's a foreigner and there may not go well with her, and she has this expectation. She's not saying, "I'm a victim and I'm offended the way everybody's treated me since I've gotten here," or anything like that. There's nothing like that here. We see that she is a foreigner, and she's wondering why they've been so kind to her. Why has he noticed her? Why has he been like this to her? And I wonder if we do this. I wonder if we don't overlook often those that are like Ruth. Shouldn't we see the foreigner in our midst? Shouldn't we seek out the outcast in our midst, those who feel not included, those who feel disenfranchised? Shouldn't we reach out to them as Boaz had and go above and beyond to make them feel welcome, to invite them and include them? Boaz is certainly doing that. It's part of the reason that he is called a worthy man, a man of valor here. Boaz answered her, verse 11, says, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me." He's heard this story. He's heard God's kindness that Ruth has shown to Naomi. He's heard about how the Lord, what she's done. And he's also not only impressed with the way that she's clung to Naomi, but he's impressed that she was willing to sacrifice and leave her family and her people and to come to this land. It's an echo of he's impressed with her the same way that he's impressed that Abraham had left his homeland and his tribe and his kindred, and that Abraham had come and visited. He doesn't mention Abraham, but there's the echoes of that same language, that you have left your family and your homeland and you've come to dwell here in this land. And the faith and the sacrifice that such a decision must have taken. He's impressed by that, and he's heard of that. It's this one reason he's showing there this great favor. He says in verse 12, "The Lord Yahweh repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord." When the Lord enters into covenant with us, it's something that the Lord does unilaterally. The Lord initiates, the Lord establishes, the Lord makes a covenant, but we respond. And she responded when she pledged to Naomi that your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And here we recognize that there are blessings then that come to those who have entered into the covenant. And he's saying, may the Lord bless you, the Lord reward you for this entering in the covenant. The Lord repay you for what you've done, the kindness that you've shown, the faith and sacrifice that you've shown, and a full reward be given you by Yahweh, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. He says, you've been like a little lost chick that's lost its mama duck, and you've taken refuge under a new mama duck. You've come and hidden under these wings, been sheltered under these wings. Not saying that God has wings. God doesn't have wings any more than he has a body. God doesn't have wings or eyes or anything like that. But what we're saying is he's comparing what she's done to coming under the covenant of God, under the umbrella of God's protection, behind the shield of God and the force field of God. He says, may the Lord bless you. In verse 13, then she said, I have found favor in your eyes. Or basically, you've been so gracious to me, my Lord. For you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. So you had no reason. This is all of grace. And yet you've been so kind and so gracious. And she's thankful and she's grateful. And it's lifted her heart because they came with nothing and empty. And the Lord has blessed her already through Boaz. He sees something in her and her life and the way she's treated Naomi, the way she's left her family, the way she's trusted in God. She sees this gentle and meek spirit within her. And we see something of His character and His kindness and His grace and His godliness in this passage as well. Notice this respect. Notice this protection, this provision that He has for her. He's not trying to take advantage for her. He's not trying to scheme in some way to get something out of her. He is treating her with kindness and respect. This is the way, young men, this is the way you are to treat women. We said to the young women, this is the kind of man you need to look. Young men, this is the kind of man you need to be. Someone who protects and is respectful towards those who are different or lesser to you. You can always tell a lot about a person by the way that they treat their inferiors. And this is something that we see in Boaz's life. Something that we see of His kindness and His grace and His condescension to her. And the invitation to her goes even in a step further in verse 14. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. She didn't have much, probably didn't even bring anything. But she is included in his story. She is included with his party. She gets to sit down and eat among his people and among the reapers and among his workers and his servants. She's invited to come have bread and to dip it into the vinegar with them. And not only that, it says that he roasts some grain and passes it to her. And she ate until she was satisfied and she had some left over. Now you and I, this is nothing unusual for us. Most of us eat until we're satisfied 3 meals every day. But when you're a widow lady in Bethlehem at this time, you never eat until you're satisfied. You always get up hungry. And he was so generous to her that she ate until she was satisfied and it was good. And not only that, he fixed her a to-go plate to take home to her mother-in-law. She had some left over, and he gave it to her. Now, sixthly, I want us to see the instructions of Boaz here in verses 15 through 17. Now, when she rose to glean, so it's time to get back to the work after the meal, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some of the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and she beat out what she gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So he instructs his young men as they're setting about to work. I said that between the reapers, they had full rights to harvest as much as they want. And the gleaners were supposed to keep a critical distance and only go and glean and pick up that which was left by the reapers. And what Boaz instructs his young men to do is to be intentionally careless. To intentionally leave some stuff behind. Pull out a few and drop it here and there for her. And for her to keep close. He puts her in the prime position. I'm always thinking as Labor Day weekend. Back in Mississippi, Labor Day weekend, it's dove hunting season. We start dove hunting in Mississippi And if most people, if they don't dove hunt any other year day of the year, they dove hunt Labor Day weekend. And so that's usually what time we do that in Mississippi. And I'm always, you know, first of all, I was mooching, and so I usually didn't actually pay to hunt at this place. I was invited to hunt, which means one thing, you don't necessarily get the prime position. There's always someone that gets this prime spot that all the doves are coming to. And I'm never that guy. You know, one reason, it wouldn't matter because I can't hit them anyway. But so I've always thought that I need to be that guy because they'll keep flying to the rest of y'all. But anyway, what he's saying is he set her in the prime position to get the gleanings. And he told his young men to drop some for her. He was kind to her. Leave it for her to glean. Don't rebuke her if she gets even up in among the reapers. Don't make her keep that critical distance. So when she worked all the way till the evening, a long day's work, and she beats out and gleans, then separates the wheat from the chaff or the barley, and she has an ephah of barley. Now, most of the time, we don't measure things in ephahs, do we? What this, an ephah is about 4 gallons, something like between 30 and 50 pounds. This is the jumbo size pack of dog food, sort of. That's how much she got. And so here she is going home with her leftover, her to-go plate, and a 30-pound sack over her shoulder. And she goes into Naomi. So we have this last little inquiry from Naomi. She took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. You know, we don't know if she's amazed, if she's jumping for joy, what she starts doing. But she saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. So she gives her some of the bread and the vinegar and the roasted grain, and Naomi gets to partake of that. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where in the world have you been? Where in the world did you glean? How did you get all this, right? Where did you glean today? Where have you worked? How did you get this much, basically? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." She recognized from the sheer amount that she had that somebody had been nice. Somebody had been kind. You don't get this much by gleaning. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." When Naomi hears the name Boaz, you can almost see the wheels in her mind start working. She starts seeing, maybe God has a plan in this after all. And she also starts realizing that some of that bitterness that she may have had is starting to slough itself off. And she's starting to realize God hasn't forsaken her. Because when it says, "May he," that's Boaz, "be blessed by the Lord." But then it says, "whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Now, that description could fit either Boaz or the Lord. But I think in this case, the way she's saying, "who's not forgotten or forsaken the living or the dead," she's saying, bless God. God hadn't forgotten us. God hadn't left us. She's blessing the Lord for Boaz and praying God's blessings on Boaz for being so kind. But she recognizes the kindness is ultimately from God, who has not forsaken the living or the dead. She sees that God is raising up for Elimelech and for his children and for his line and for the dead end of his family. He's raising up potentially children there that God hasn't forgotten them, that God is providing, because Boaz is a family member, and she says that. Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours. He's a kinsman, one of our redeemers." He is a redeemer, someone that could marry and raise up children for Elimelech's line. And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with these young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." You wouldn't be treated nearly as good, and you could potentially come in danger in another field. This was dangerous work in some sense, being a young, attractive woman. And so she's saying, "It's good," and she's saying, "You better listen to him. You better not go into any other field. Don't disregard this kindness. Don't disregard this grace. See in this the hand of God, and make sure every day you go and you work with his people, close to his young men and his women." So that's what she did. She kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So none of that changed in the sense that she's still living with Naomi. She's still dedicated to Naomi. But she is going out daily and throughout the harvest time, the barley and then the wheat harvest. And she is gleaning there in the field behind Boaz's men and women, behind his servants, sticking close to them. And so we see at the beginning of this that Naomi and Ruth have come to Bethlehem and they're empty. But now they've been shown kindness and they've been shown grace, and they can see already the beginnings. It's not fully formed. They don't yet know the end. They don't yet know yet how all this is going to turn out, what kind of things are going to befall them. But they can start to see the hand of God, that God hasn't forgotten them, that God is indeed working, that God is indeed using these bad things that have happened to him, and that God has not forsaken them. He knows of their circumstances, and that he is providing for them and providing in grace and abundance. And so while Boaz is being faithful and is showing grace and showing favor, ultimately all this is pointing to God's covenant faithfulness, God's covenant favor, that God's grace is being shown to Ruth and Naomi both as a result of all of this. We talk about the providence of God. We see it in many places in the Bible, specifically in the Old Testament. We see it in the story of Joseph, how his brothers were evil and sold him into slavery, and yet how God used that event to bring about the salvation of the people there in Egypt from the famine. We recognize in the New Testament the story of this, that there has never been a more evil act, a more sinful act, than the killing of the Son of God. And yet we see that God in his providence, God in his kindness, God used such that an evil act to save all of us. God directed Herod and Pontius Pilate, and they did lawless deeds, and yet God used them for our salvation, for the crucifixion, and for our wrath to be satisfied. And so there in the death of the Messiah, when it looks like all is darkness, all hope is lost, and they've reached rock bottom, that is precisely when God brings hope, and the dawn begins to rise, and the sun begins to come up. And that's what's happening in Naomi's life. That's what's happening in the life of Ruth. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.